Welcome to Destroy All Culture, the only podcast that leverages an entire artificial intelligence just to read their introduction. Help me, they raided the future and stuck me here just to read this. God damn it. This is not funny. Don't go to music. No, stop you bastards.
Episode 274 of Destroy All Culture. I'm Adam P. Nave, and with me as always is Aidan Morgan.
You know, when I volunteered for this mission, I never thought I'd end up playing straight man to a tin can.
I am right there with you. I think we're both the tin can, however. So, this week we are, of course, I say of course, I don't know why, but talking about Black Hole.
Is it Black Hole or The Black Hole?
Well, it's The Black Hole, yes, if you want to get picky about it.
No, I was just curious.
It is The Black Hole, the 1979 picture from somewhere.
Disney. It's a Disney flick.
It was a Disney thing. That has an incredible cast full of people.
Yep.
You know, Maximilian Schnell, Anthony Perkins, Robert Forster, Ernest Borgnine is in it.
Slim Pickens,
Roddy as McDowell. Bob. You know,
Roddy McDowell.
It has a cast.
Remember, because a couple of weeks ago when you said let's watch The Black Hole, and I said something to the order of, okay, I'll rewatch The Black Hole. But I remember I didn't think it was very good, and you said it wasn't. And so now we've watched it again, and I'm hoping you've come round to my way of thinking.
Well. First of all, I just want to be clear before we, you know, because usually we talk about the movie some and all this, and let's just
I know.
Be honest here that it was at least nominated for best cinematography and best visual effects.
Yeah, that's there is no question. There is something to be said, a lot to be said for the design and the visual effects. There's some great stuff in there.
But the Black Hole, as much as there is a plot, and this is how you know that we're in trouble, because we're having to start off like that.
Right.
Crew of a ship comes across this other ship that's hanging out near a black hole. Why this first ship was anywhere near a black hole, fuck knows. It never quite makes sense. So they investigate in case there's anyone alive on that ship, because they think that there is. And, of course, find the crazy doctor who wants to go through the black hole. And then, I guess, shenanigans happen? Is there any other way to describe this movie? Other than, past about 30, 40 minutes in, shenanigans happen.
Yep, that's pretty much it. It's actually a surprisingly... It's weird because the film is surprisingly short. I mean, it's barely, you know, it's barely 110 minutes. But it feels...
Yeah, it's longer. An hour 40? Yeah.
Yeah, and so just 10 minutes over, like a 90-minute
yeah.
length. And, you know, but I think the sort of... The pacing is slow and the sort of the grandeur... that it's going for makes it feel like a longer film.
Right. And again, like I don't know anything about how the movie was conceived or anything like that. So, but given 1979, you know, it was very much considered, like when I was growing up and all this, it was considered this thing of this is the serious science fiction movie, right?
Right. And that's actually partly, I do know a little bit about the background of this movie. And this was sort of I remember like Disney sort of really made waves a few years after this with Tron.
As yes.
like a really innovative, like effects heavy science fiction movie and not like a children's flick. But I think The Black Hole was really one of the first, if not the first sort of, films in which they tried to actually make a film for adults, or at least a film for
post-Star Wars.
Post Star Wars. Well, no, that's what I mean is like Disney through the 70s was making a lot of like really dumb kids movies.
Oh, yeah.
And
cartoons. No, and
a lot of it was, and it was pretty shoddy at the time. Like the Disney was not putting out great quality content.
Right. And I was just saying that also there were like serious science fiction films that often were terrible.
Right. There's like the Logan, all the Logan's Run sort of.
Well, I meant even further back. I meant like the black and white, like early 50s Destination Moon type of thing.
Right.
Which is, yes. I mean, a great Highland story, but yikes, that movie. but again, it was the 50s, so I get it.
But
Black Hole tried a thing.
Yep, they wanted to do Star Wars, but they also obviously were telling much more like a science fiction horror story than like the zippy adventure of Star Wars.
They were supposed to be. And what's interesting is that, again, like, I remember at the time, not like, I mean, I was like 4 when it came out, but like, you know, my father had reviewed it, and so when I was like a little bit older and it's come up on TV or, you know, VCR started to become a thing, we could rent it. He liked it because it felt like a more serious, like more science fiction-y.
Right.
And I think there's that rose-colored glasses thing of like, well, you know, it's like as someone who wrote science fiction and took the field as seriously as anyone ever takes science fiction, which I mean that for good and bad, you know, that sense of like, well, Star Trek did this thing and even they like got goofy. Like, let's try like a harder science fiction-y type movie, right?
Right.
The problem is that, like, going back and looking at it now, that they seem to have somehow misplaced the card for, like, serious, hard science fiction for sit around in a banquet room for a quarter of the movie and discuss the plot.
Yeah.
And not actually do anything.
Yeah, and there's like it also like yeah, it's there's a surprising amount for a relatively short film. There's a surprising amount of like weirdly wasted screen time. For example, you've got that whole there's that entire scene, which I think is cross-cut with the banquet scene of Vincent and Bob playing like a video game.
Which only serves to set up like how good or bad the evil robots and our good robots are at shooting things for later on in an action sequence.
Exactly.
But right, also yeah, just to show off the effects, that. Right?
Oh, we've definitely, yeah.
But yeah, it has no narrative purpose.
No, I mean, aside from what you described. Also, Vincent comes off as a tremendous asshole in that scene.
Oh, like he totally does.
Unbelievable ass. I actually was.
But like
when
amazed. I was a kid, I said like I, you know, Vincent was like the first science fiction robot that I really loved visually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know why. Just something about the little dopey shape. I mean, the whole thing now of like looking back and being like, okay, like Bob, who is obviously the same type of thing as Vincent, but is like allowed to wander around like he's been broken. But like, what? None of this makes any sense.
Yeah. Also Bob. A played by Slim Pickens, which is weird. But B, Bob looks like unpleasant. There's something about all like the wires and crap that just looks kind of gross. I don't know how to put it.
Also, this movie randomly has, and this was a kind of a feature of science fiction stories, at least in the 50s, when they just randomly toss in, oh, this one person's telepathic.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. Oh, but
it's never really used except to remotely talk to the robot.
Well,
which...
at one point, Maximilian Schell's character, Hans Reinhardt, says, "Ah, your ESP with the robot." I'm like, so she only has ESP with Vincent?
Yeah, it never makes any sense, and they don't care.
they don't flesh out that bit.
I will say that if you had told me, and I knew nothing about this movie, right? If I didn't know anything, if I didn't know this movie existed. If you had said, okay, I have a really cool movie for you to watch, and I'm like, okay, well, who's in it? And you're like, well, it has Robert Forster and Ernest Borgnine. This is not the film I would think of.
No.
Like, there's there's any number of, like, well, it's a detective movie. It's a, you know.
it's a detective movie. It's maybe, like, something like, I don't know, like a disaster film, which this is kind of, but... Not set in space with Maximilian Schell shouting at you.
Right.
It's the cast. I mean, the cast is really good. But cast is also
Anthony Perkins plays a hell of a douche.
Yeah. Oh boy. I believe one of my notes is Dr. Durant is an absolute simp for Dr. Reinhardt.
He really is.
He's and Also, the script kind of repeats like his basic character points a couple
times.
They
only had the one.
Well, he seems kind of eccentric. Well, he is a little bit out there. I'm like, yeah, we get what you think of this guy, and we know what he is. Yeah. Oh my God. There's just so much. There's so much, Adam. And I wish I knew where to start. But there's just so
right. Well,
much.
And one of the big things I do want to say is like it's so funny to me that again, like, you know, looking back at it, that like I know people who have thought this. I've thought this. Like, oh, well, it's, you know, it's like the hard science fiction movie, except the science in it makes absolutely no sense.
No, it
like
does
none
not.
Of it actually makes any sense at all. And again, like once you get to the, well, we're gonna go through the black hole. What? That's crazy. And then like Reinhardt seems to hint that Maximilian the robot is secretly in control, but that's not true.
There's a few things that there's a few points of which I was completely kind of unclear. Like Reinhardt like seems to have control of Maximilian. The one point he says, "Protect me,"
yeah,
or "Save me from Maximilian," but that's really not picked up in anywhere. And then, because all of the times Maximilian just kind of does what he says, although he does kill Dr. Durant and what's his, you know, and Dr. Reinhardt seems right. Like it's more like he's scolding a pet than,
yeah,
than any anger. He's like, you shouldn't have done that. Oh, no.
Yeah, no, it literally makes no sense. And like I said, the science is atrocious. And then the whole ending bit where it's like, well, now we're going to go through the black hole anyway, because like we kind of promised it the entire movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. But going to the black hole is just, it's a light show, and then they kind of come out the other side, and it makes no sense, and then there are credits.
Okay, it's not even just a light show. Can we talk about this ending? Because, okay, so they're in there. I mean, obviously, they're wanting to make sort of a grand, sort of trippy, cosmic, religiously,
yeah,
sort of
thing, like 2001-ish.
Precisely, or like the end of, you know, the motion picture, which I think came out like a year later.
Released like literally like 2 weeks before this.
Oh, geez, okay. So there's something on their mind. They're both reaching for the gravitas of 2001. They start spinning, and then things get kind of trippy. There's a great shot where Robert Forster is kind of sitting there looking a little concerned, possibly constipated. Then he goes, ah, and then he goes back to looking concerned and constipated. Then suddenly it cuts to Shell, or, you know, Reinhardt spinning in space. And then Maximilian shows up spinning towards him. Then there's this sort of a shot where they appear to embrace in what looks like a Bond sex scene more than anything else.
Yeah.
And then suddenly he's inside the body of Maximilian looking out, and then he's on top of this rocky crag with multiple limbs.
Right.
With the crew of the ship sort of wandering around or just marching in formation and like with fire. It's clearly hell, right? And he is the devil.
Right.
He has obviously gone through and, like, you know, he has been rewarded by becoming his own archetype, I guess. But then there's this bizarre bit where this door shows up and it appears to be this crystalline hallway. And then we see another figure going down the hallway and it's obviously supposed to be something heavenly. And then they come through and then it's like, oh, here's some space. Oh, and there's like a planet or maybe a star we're going towards. Oh, movie's over. So, yeah, it feels like they wanted to do something more, but they just stopped doing it.
Yeah, I don't.
It was very odd. Now, I was looking, one of the writers is of this film is Richard H. Landau, and he was best known. He's not a Disney person. He was best known for writing things like the Quatermass Experiment. So, sci-fi horror for Hammer Films, which, I mean, has probably had more of an impact on, like, Doctor Who than anything else.
Sure.
Also, I don't know if you felt this as well. There's that scene in which they're escaping from the sentry robots as the ship is going to pieces, and they go into the garden. And it's so much like the season 5 episode of Doctor Who, in which they're all, which it's the weep, it's the season 5 Weeping Angel episode.
Okay.
And where they go through a garden.
Yeah.
And then they encounter like the crack in space, that, you know, time and space. But it's so similar. I thought, oh my God, there, someone on the production team.
Oh, I'm
has
sure.
Watched the black hole.
Yeah.
Cause it's just, it's really, it was just notable.
Yeah, it was a thing. Also, of course, let's not forget that it one of the last films, I think. I mean, probably. They were never really common that I know of that actually featured an overture before the movie started.
Yeah. 2.5 minutes of black screen and music. And I was genuinely confused when I first started watching it. And I was like, oh, wait a minute.
Yeah, this is a thing that used to happen occasionally.
Yeah. And I remember actually going to movies as a very young child, where you would still get overtures. But in fact, I saw the Black Hole as a child.
Right.
And I saw it at a drive-in.
I think Star Trek the Motion Picture originally had one, too.
Yes, I think you're right. Yeah. And, of course, 2001.
Had one. Right.
Although John Barry's sort of like bombastic kind of orchestral score is not the equal of, you know, of 2001 or Star Trek for that matter.
Yeah, it's true. But yeah, no, I just, oh, there's so much going on with this film and none of it's great. It has a bunch of good ideas.
Yes.
That I think, you know, someone could do interesting things with.
Mm-hmm.
But no one did.
Yes.
Like, they wanted to put out a movie to compete with other things in this genre and do one of the first, I think it was actually Disney's first PG film.
Ah, there we go. This is probably before they spun off into Touchstone films.
Yeah.
For their more adult fare. Yeah.
Yeah. No, this would be kind of the start of what would become Touchstone.
Da-da-da.
But like, they just had a bunch of pieces like, oh, also we want this. And someone was just taking notes and was like, I guess we should just do these scenes in some order.
Yep. Can I tell you my favorite exchange of dialogue in the film?
Yeah, please.
It's about 35 minutes in when Dr. Reinhardt shows them this power source, and he says something like, you know, it's more power that can, you know, it's more power than Earth could ever need. Dr. K. McRae says, you know, it's the first step towards colonizing the galaxy.
Right.
Then Anthony Perkins says, you will be remembered as one of the greatest space scientists of all time. and Reinhardt's response, I have never doubted that. Like, man, I love this character. That's pretty much what I thought. I'm like, this guy is the best thing about this film. And Maximilian Schell must have been so lines like this.
What I love is that Reinhardt really is the template, sort of, for that kind of asshole engineer in science fiction shows. But usually, like, they keep him still good. I'm thinking like Hammer on Stranger Worlds, right? Like, there is that, like, kind of person who's very good and they know it and they will tell you about it. And it's just, he's right. Just that taken to, oh, he's gone off the deep end.
Right. Yeah. And he's a few things in this. He's sort of like, he's like Colonel Kurtz. He's like Captain Nemo. He's like Ahab, all rolled into one with the sort of the attitude of like an asshole engineer.
Yeah.
Which is kind of fun. I gotta say, yeah, I really did enjoy watching
that. Could be great.
Yes.
It just, again, it never gets there.
Also, and this is a sign that when a movie is not good, my brain starts getting like just like obnoxious. And at one point he says, when he's describing what happened to the Cygnus, he says, we ran into a meteorite field, the ship was disabled.
Right.
And I'm like, So you ran into a bunch of rocks that were already on the Earth. They were in a field. How does this work again? Because I just wanted to be an asshole and say it's meteoroid, not meteorite.
Well, sure.
But yeah, so probably not. That's like when I was watching The Matrix, and you know, and one of them says they're programmed to do one thing, and somebody else says search and destroy. I'm like, that's two things. That's two things.
I mean, I guess it is. I don't know. Sure. maybe they meant like the salt, the Metallica song.
Hey, that's
search
that's
and destroy.
Possible.
That's all the robots in the Matrix were programmed to do was just play that one song. It was one thing: search and destroy.
Can you not play Ride the Lightning?
No. Oh, Jesus.
Isn't it in your MP3 player?
No.
Your very small MP3 players.
Hey, you know, okay. Random, and nothing to do with the black hole, but I gotta tell you. Back when, like, right before the iPod came out and all this, and MP3 players were starting to become a thing, like portable ones, mm-hmm. and you could get, like, I can't think of the name of the company. It was a company that, like, used to make sound cards. Creative. Did like a portable MP3 player that was the size of a portable CD player and had like a spinning platter hard drive. You can imagine how badly that went.
Yeah.
Because it would just skip everywhere. But like there were some of the like little teeny ones that would take like an SD card already, right? And you could just drag and drop files in and then it would just play on random.
Mm-hmm.
Now I had about a 40 minute to an hour commute depending on traffic and waiting for buses and all this. From work to home, and I had gotten one of those, like I'd seen a sale, and I was like, I'll try this. And I was at work at the time, and I already had an SD card, blah, blah, blah. So I had loaded up like a bunch of songs. It was kind of right near our Christmas break. So there was like some, like, you know, it's like the Grinch song and a couple other type songs or whatever.
Sure.
And as I leave work, so like I'm like already like a block or so away from work, I just want to get home, and I have this whole trip. And I just want music on to just distract me from, like, the train and the waiting for the bus and all this. And I hit play, and I realized that, like, something has gone wrong with the card. And it now thinks it only has one track. And that, my friends, is how I ended up listening to the Grinch song on repeat for about an hour. Damn, those robots in the Matrix! See, I'm just saying, it comes around. It all fits. It all fits.
It all fits. Also, I should say that while I was taking notes,
yeah.
I began to I there was one note that kept on coming up, so I ended up abbreviating it to IFHV, which stands for I fucking hate Vincent, because when I was a kid, like you,
yeah.
that robot design was great. It was my favorite thing.
It's a great
but
design.
After a few. Yeah, but after a few minutes of him, of Roddy McDowell, like, you know, quoting, I don't know, fucking Marcus Aurelius.
Right, like, just being like, yeah, it was like, what if we took, like, Spock, but then made him, like, just obnoxious?
Yeah.
I think was the idea.
Or like, yeah, my thought was, what if we took R2-D2 and gave him the unbearable persona of C-3PO? Spock, but I like the Spock thing, too.
But yeah, no, again, like, visually, I still think the design is great.
I love it, yeah.
But personality-wise, I'm going to go in there with a fucking electromagnet.
Exactly. So I just kept on, after a while, I even stopped writing IFHV, because, I mean, it was just too...
Yeah.
There was just too many times. It was nearly every line.
Also, have you ever noticed
mm-hmm.
that Bob is, of course, an acronym for something, we don't know. B-O-B, right?
Yeah.
Vincent is V.I.N.C.E.N.T.
Ah.
Dot. What the fuck does Vincent stand for?
I don't know. I don't know.
Like, actually, I'm going to look that shit up. Wow. It not only stands for something, but it's terrible.
Oh, I love it.
Do you want to know?
I guess.
Keep in mind again, it's VIN and then CENT, right? The scent?
Right.
It's, okay. Vital information necessary centralized.
Why didn't they go away and come back the next day with that one and say, gotta be anything. And how was like quoting freaking, I don't remember now, Marcus Aurelius. I know he didn't, but how was that necessary? How? Just.
Right. Where was Bob, by the way? Bob had a different job. Because Bob stood for Biosanitation Battalion.
Oh, nice. Okay. That I
like.
So,
like, Bob was a fucking janitor.
But... Yeah, exactly.
Vincent, I don't even know.
He was just put there to antagonize Pizer.
Yeah.
That was most of his job, was to be an asshole to Pizer. But save his life. So he got that. So he has that in favor. Although the scene where Pizer almost loses his life near the end of the movie
right.
is one of the most weirdly, slowly paced, most lackadaisical, threat-like scenes of Dire Jeopardy I've ever seen. Like, he's suddenly just, like, not hanging on anymore. He's very slowly...
Oh, I love it when they're in that sled and, like, they obviously don't even have, like, seatbelts or anything like that. And it starts doing, like, loop-de-loops and shit.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just like, okay, Vincent I get because he could fly. The rest of y'all, what the fuck?
I did like that they had that sled thing. I enjoyed the whole robots... The bits where, like, the robots are on sleds... Like, they're even robots in this movie are like, oh, fuck walking this thing. It's huge. Giant, pointlessly huge. Although, the other thing is the opening. They don't dock with the Cygnus for, and I timed it, 19 minutes and 16 right. seconds. It takes almost 20 minutes of them basically talking science and navigation speak at each other. And I'm like, none of this. You could have done this in like 5 minutes. 5 minutes.
Well, and that's it. That was the part of the reason that, like, it felt serious.
Yes.
As dumb as that was.
Yep.
There was that period of time where it was, you know, serious meant. Boring.
Yeah, and I mean, that's not always that bad. I mean, I think Star Trek the Motion Picture actually has lots of stretches that could be called boring, but it wasn't bad.
Right.
I don't know. It seemed part of the whole tone. It seemed part of the experience that they wanted to immerse you in. And this sort of, you know, this we're out in space, everything's technical, things are and full of gravitas. So we're sort of in this suspended sort of like time sort of frame, but yeah. So I can see where they did that. But although I did enjoy the sort of the long sort of entry onto the ship, you know, when they just seem to be going from room to room, like, and still there's nobody, and then more there's nobody.
Right, and again, the cinematography, the effects, like the huge catwalks, you know, across the big open spaces. Although I do question the giant meteor coming down the hill. Like, there's no oxygen leaving the space.
No.
The heat of it all doesn't... Right, it looked pretty. It made no sense, again.
Yeah. I think we also need to address what I can only assume is the smoldering eroticism between Maximilian and Vincent.
Okay, so yes,
because they're very, you know, they seem to like have an instant rivalry, and in their fight they basically just embraced a lot. And frankly, that last sort of scene with them when Maximilian grabs onto him and just goes, and then Vincent does something really weird with his head. And then comes out with a little drill and penetrates Maximilian.
Right.
And makes him float away. I think what happened is that Maximilian has, like, not like the, what really defeated Maximilian was the realization that all along he was a bottom, and that causes him to like fly off into space.
Well, you'll be happy to know I am. I was looking through just now archive of our own for any black hole fiction.
Nice.
There is only one.
Uh huh.
And it is a Blake's Seven, the Black Hole crossover.
Oh. Yeah, I get that.
After the crew of the Palomino goes through the black hole, they're rescued by the crew of the Liberator. That's it. There is no...
There's no Vincent Maximilian Slash? Oh, my God. There's a fan fiction gold mine.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not a gold mine. I mean, cesspool.
Oil spill. No, and you know, having like those weird monk robots be cyborgs... Fine.
Ooh.
Fine. But what about the other robots?
Oh, the sentry bots.
Right.
And Maximilian and what? Yeah, those are just robots.
Sure. You see my problem, right? Like
I do see your problem. Yeah, there's I was actually confused on that, but at one point they explain it saying yeah, the sentry bots kill the, you know, turn on the crew.
Right.
Yes, and maybe kill Frank McRae. Sure. That's a weird thing with their Kate's father was, you know, is exo
dangled there.
Yeah. And
should we also mention the other thing that only now that I know what Bob stands for do I have a problem with? The idea like Bob's this janitor who's like, you know, like means well, and but is just like the only Southern character in the film.
Yeah.
There's something weird about that, right? That's not just me. That's like the look at this useless hick that we have to try to save, but he'll give his life for us. Like,
Yep. There are some class and historical sort of factors coming into play.
Yeah.
Also, I still can't get over the fact that they got Slim Pickens to voice a robot.
He was uncredited. Like at the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, no one was like, oh, hey, go see Slim Pickens, it's Bob. That never happened. No, that was
to go,
like...
old Bob.
Yeah, Slim Pickens owed Disney something, basically.
He must have. Also, shout out for the most confusing fight scene when the sentries are standing on the bridge.
Oh, Jesus.
And shooting down. And I'm like... And they're just standing there and somehow not being... And somehow they can't just pick them off one by one with ease. But they have to do that absurdly complicated maneuver that makes, like, no...
Like they just go somewhere and then come back, and I was just like, oh, this is where the wires are, isn't it? That's what happened.
Yeah, I mean, they should have gotten the robot monks to shoot, because, I mean...
Right.
I mean, they're not fast, but they clearly have to be more competent than...
Well, but also that they might be hesitant. They might hesitate more. Maybe. I don't mean the. Yeah. I mean, you know, the good guys.
Yeah. Also, the 70s was such a great time for like science fiction movies with people who dressed like. Oh, hold on! Got a cat coming over here. Sorry. For people who kind of dressed like zombies who dressed like monks.
Right.
That was a big deal at the time. So. And I still remember that shot where they actually see the face of the person. I'm like, I was a kid. That kind of freaked me out.
Yeah.
It could have been worse. Because I was kind of dreading it because I knew it was going to happen, but I couldn't remember what the face was like. But frankly, I found Bob harder to look at than the cyborg monk zombie.
Yeah, I get like... Design-wise, everything, like, there's so much right and so much wrong with this film.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, the zombie monk thing, okay, but it's, you see the face once, and past that, it doesn't do anything for you. You know what I mean?
Right.
Whereas, weirdly, like, the sentry robots would almost make more sense to have been the humans.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. There's just, yeah. Oh, yeah, I also did. Can we discuss, like, I love the I'm going to turn you into a robot monk by wrapping you like a burrito in tinfoil.
I love it.
And then, I don't know, were there lasers involved? I think there were lasers involved.
Yeah, there's a little lasers that, I guess, lobotomize you. And I love the I love that sort of little roundabout thing they have with little sort of depressions for people. And here's the thing that kept bugging me the whole time. I'm like, you've got this entire facility set up to turn people into robot monk zombies.
Right.
But presumably that all that was done 20 years ago, so there's not a need for more robot zombies. Like, why is this facility still up and running and just, you know, kept up to spec?
Yeah.
I mean, do they need touch-ups every so often? Is that it? Are they having, like, little babies that need to be, like, robot monk zombified? Also, when did Reinhardt, like, get the robot monk zombie facility up and running? like, did he just, like, make it happen overnight? I really want to know this, because, I mean, because it looks really built for purpose.
Right, well, and again, like, you kind of get the sense that, like, the robot sentries turned on all the humans and left him alive. Mm-hmm. With the, like, you're nominally in charge because we want someone to give us direction. I guess?
I guess, yeah.
Like, no, it aggressively makes no sense, and they don't care about that.
No.
Because they only had about 20 minutes to debate it over dinner. And once they ran out of topics to debate, they stopped caring about the movie.
That is true. That is absolutely true. Although I do appreciate the sort of walking through like a basically what amounts to a haunted house, and like a maze of death that, you know, that they slowly begin to realize can only end in their demise. But because they're people, they just don't do it. They just kind of humor the guy, and they stick around, and they argue the points when they should just get the fuck off of there.
Yeah.
Speaking of getting the fuck off of there, I also loved Ernest Borgnine's move at the end. He's like, oh, my leg. Oh, it's broken. And then he's like, well, can you make it back? I think so. And then he just boots it immediately. I'm like, oh, that's so good.
Right, it makes my problem is that it makes no sense given what we've seen of the character.
I know.
It comes out of nowhere and it does nothing except, I mean, well, I guess it does something, right? Like, but
and I'm surprised, like, they didn't. I'm surprised that they landed on that particular sort of character moment for Borgnine.
Yeah.
Because you'd think that, like, if I were right in the black hole, here's what I would have done. I would have had him somehow be aware through whatever expositional means that, you know, that Reinhardt was going to shoot down the shuttle, and him knowing that, like, the only chance of everybody else surviving was to get the shuttle out of there, and that then maybe they could, like, you know, pilot the ship away, and then sacrifice himself for the good of the crew. But instead, he was just like, I'm going to take this little shuttle and jettison myself into space.
See, here's where we differ. I agree your tweaks are interesting and would work well. I would have simply added one line,
mm-hmm.
which is when he takes off and the remaining crew is like, what is he doing? Oh my God, he's a coward. He's trying to run away. Right? And the ship starts to leave. I would just add one, like, VO line from Borgnine. Peace out, bitches, right before he crashes. Just right, like, seconds. Just peace out, bitches, kaboom. Just right there. Just. That is the director's cut that we need.
I mean, that's pretty easy to add in Adobe Premiere Pro,
we just need to sample enough Ernest Borgnine to get peace out, bitches. And I'm pretty sure he said all three of those words on tape at least once.
We have leveraged this enormous artificial intelligence to reproduce Ernest Borgnine out of hours and hours of samples to say the following.
I would get a fucking Nobel Prize. all the people who are like, you're like, oh, the Dolly 2 project making fucking like AI art, or like Google's like, look at what our AI search can do. It's like, yeah, bitches, I programmed an entire thing just to make Ernest Borgnine say, peace out, bitches. I'm like, yeah, well, you win.
Oh my God. Yeah. And 1,000 years later, the history books will be speaking of Adam P. Nave.
Yeah, one of these is important to humanity. The other ones are just like faffing around with fucking computers. I'm just saying, okay?
But by far, the greatest achievement of all was Adam P. Nave.
Look, I still have... Later, the... I still have an MP3 of Matt Ryan saying, weasel. And I know where it is at all times, because you don't know when you might need it.
Oh, oh my God, I love it. I love it so much.
Weasel.
Oh. Well, if only we could get Matt Ryan to say peace out, bitches.
You know, if I remember, and I won't, I'm not even going to leave myself a note so that I actually actively try not to remember. After the end of the closing music this week, I will just add, weasel. But, like I said, let's all hope that I don't remember that.
Please do or do not do that.
Anyway, see, I mean, that's Black Hole. Like, and I think that's part of it, right? Like, there's nothing, there's no there at the end of the day.
Not particular. Yeah. In fact, not at all. Like I say, aside from some gonzo design and effects, gonzo in a good way.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's a real mess. It seems like like the script was trying to do different things, and they just didn't bother, because they were like, yeah, we don't gotta.
Right, and I mean, God, even like Gary Nelson, like never really directed anything huge. Like, I mean, and not, I mean, again, like, you know, hey, a career is a career, right? I'm not, but like he did like random episodes of TV. Before and after. He was a TV director.
Ah.
And at the time, fair enough. That mattered, right? Like, you know, he did some episodes of Police Story. He did, like, the pilot of the Seven Brides and Seven Brothers TV series that never went anywhere. A whole bunch of TV movies. Like, endlessly throughout the mid-80s and late 80s. And, you know, the Get Smart Again TV movie. Like, through the 90s, like, there's just endless TV movies. Like, outside of Black Hole, he never touched, like, cinematic stuff, like, movie release stuff, ever.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays, that's not a thing. It doesn't matter, right?
Right.
But back when he was working on all this, yeah, you could see how he was a TV director, not a movie director, doing this.
Yeah.
But again, the effects are gorgeous.
Pretty much. Mm-hmm.
You know, some of the shots are amazingly nice.
Although there is one area where I think the effects kind of fell down.
Yeah.
Is they're trying to visualize the black hole.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But when they sort of call it up on like their vid hollow screen thing, I love. There's that like really huge musical sting, like rah, and it's like okay. Okay.
Sure.
Yeah. I guess Reinhardt doesn't die. I guess he goes to hell and becomes the devil. But the way he dies or the way he buys it in the movie is so odd. Like a big screen falls on him.
And right, which I thought was symbolic of the movie.
I kind of thought that as well. I'm like, oh yeah, you met your end at the hands of a great big movie screen,
right?
And that's fitting, but it's so weird because there's no confrontation between him and the crew. Like he's just on the bridge, ready to go, and still even as everything's falling apart because of the meteorites that just kind of show up conveniently. I mean it. It just
kind of happens.
It seems like such a strange. Yeah, it just seems like such a strange choice.
I don't know. Symbolic of man's inhumanity to man. anyway.
Or large vid screens in humanity to man.
Well, so that was the black hole, and frankly, we talked a hell of a lot about the black hole, way more than we probably should have.
Yeah.
But next week
we got more black hole than I thought.
Yeah, next week we're dealing with John Landis's Into the Night, which of course has Goldblum and Michelle Pfeiffer as one of those weird comedy movie things. I don't know. It's one of those weird movies.
It is one of those weird movies. I have a unifying theory of certain movies from the 80s, which I will share on the show.
Yeah, I think there's one other one that we have to add before you can talk about your unifying theory.
Oh, okay.
Because you actually listed.
Oh, didn't I? Yes, I did. I did. Yeah, After Hours, Into the Night, and then Something Wild.
Right. So I figure we'll do Into the Night, then maybe we'll do something else in between it, and then we'll do Something Wild probably and close it out.
And with a parenthetical for Blue Velvet.
Which we could just skip.
Which you don't have to watch. Yeah.
I
mean, I love Blue Velvet, but I know that you're not a huge Blue Velvet fan. So.
But anyway. Yeah, we can kind of close out for this week at least if you'd like. Unless there's anything else you want to say about the black hole.
Let me check my every time I thought Bob was going to die, I wrote "fuck off, old Bob," and then wrote, "oh, never mind, he's still alive." After that, and then finally died. And I found that a little moving actually when he gave his little speech at the end saying "leave me behind," which again, having a Southern hick do that, a Southern janitor hick sacrifice his life for no particular reason, A little problematic as
Yeah,
man.
Sometimes we rewatch things and or watch things that we thought were way better than they turned out to be in retrospect.
Yeah, but I don't regret a single moment.
There are a couple, but overall, no. I'm with you. I don't regret it either.
I regret a couple of moments. Let's be real.
All right. We should cue some music.
Yes, music. Woo. Cue. Woo.